Hi, this is Kate from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com, and today I have a very special guest. Her name is Dr. Sarah Cheyette. She graduated cum laude in cognitive neuroscience from Princeton University and received her medical degree from the UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine. Following specialty training in pediatrics at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles and pediatric neurology at Seattle Children's Hospital, she settled with her family in the San Francisco Bay Area. She practices at the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, where she focuses on treating ADHD in both children and adults. She's the author of 4 books, 3 on ADHD, called ADHD and the Focused Mind, Winning with ADHD, and ADHD and Me. And she also wrote a book about headaches called Mommy, My Head Hurts.
Yep.
Very well accomplished.
I'm doing the best I can.
It's pretty incredible. So thank you for joining me. I asked, do you go by Dr. Sarah?
That'll work.
Dr. Sarah to join us. I want to be very respectful of you and all your accomplishments. So I asked Dr. Sarah to be here to share aspects about ADHD that can be, they're difficult subjects that parents of ADHD children have to deal with. And I asked her to kind of share her wisdom and insights to help parents who are dealing with kids when anxiety, depression, and maybe suicidal ideation kind of starts to come into play with a child, teen, or young adult who has ADHD.
Yeah, I'm glad you had asked me, because these are such important topics, and they're not fun topics, that's for sure. I mean, this is just really, when your child is unhappy, it just gets you. And there's just nothing worse for a parent than a child who is anxious or depressed or both. And if they're talking about suicide, you know, people don't know what to do. So thank you for having me. I'll do the best I can. But thank you for addressing these important topics on your show.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. It's not the fun part of the show, but an important part.
Yes.
I think to talk about. So let's start kind of from the top of just explaining like how ADHD and anxiety and or depression are all related to each other.
Yes. So statistically, people with ADHD are more likely to have anxiety and depression, and vice versa. Like if you have anxiety and depression, sometimes it's because of undiagnosed or undertreated ADHD. I think historically, especially for girls, the anxiety and the depression was more noticed by society. And it's been only recently that people have been looking for the attention deficit component, if it's there. It's not always there. If you think about ADHD in general, you have to think about the difference between focusing and not focusing, right? So focusing is kind of like having one thing on your desk and everything else put away. I mean, in any situation, I could be thinking about lots of different things. You know, I'm thinking about you and this question, Kate. I could be thinking about the bird outside the window. I could be thinking about, I hope my daughter is putting away her laundry like I told her to, and many other different things. But when I'm focused, I've got you as more important than all these other things. When I'm not focused, it's like all these different things keep hopping on my table, and they're all kind of equally important to my brain. And so my brain is going from one thing to the other. I mean, it's not resting, it's kind of doing different things. But unlike when it has just one thing to do, when I'm in a not focused state, my brain is working and working and working and not really doing anything that completes and nothing that feels good, right? So the purpose of focusing, really, you know, who cares if you're focused? Well, You should care if you're focused, because when you're focused and you can put all your brain power to one thing, you can do that one thing very well, or at least to the best of your ability. And it's not the thing itself. Kids are like, oh, yeah, I could get an A and then I could go to college and stuff like that. Well, like, whatever. It's not the thing itself. It's how does it make you feel when you do things? Hopefully, it makes you feel good. So, focus is about getting that good experience. Hey, I can do this over and over again. And when you do that over and over again, you know what? You're building self-esteem.
Right.
When you build self-esteem, you can deal with the world better in that, if something goes wrong, you have more resilience. Like, I don't know. I think you're local here, Kate.
Yeah, I
So,
am.
like here in the Bay Area, we've got Steph Curry. Yay, go Steph, right? He makes basket after basket after basket, but sometimes he misses the game-winning shot. He doesn't go, I'm a bad basketball player. He goes, oh, okay, I'm a good basketball player, but even good basketball players miss things. So I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to work harder. I'm going to ask my coach about my technique. They deal with it and they maintain their self-esteem. So focus is something that leads to self-esteem because you have these good experiences. You get lots more yay stuff or yay whoever, and then you feel good and then you go do it again. And so it builds a positive cycle over and over again. And when you're not focused too much of the time, which is essentially what ADHD is, like I said, your brain's going, 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 doing, 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 but nothing gets done. As a matter of fact, a lot of things remain undone, or because you've been hopping around, you might make more mistakes, or because you feel you can see everything all at once, it's more anxiety provoking. So when you're in the not focused state too much of the time, you have more experiences of this doesn't feel good, or I'm not good at this. And so then the next time you are going to do something, you might feel like, oh my goodness, I'm not good at this. And it makes you more likely to make mistakes and to not want to do it the next time. So, too much time in the not focused state, which is basically ADHD, leads to a lot of negative experiences. And it also leads to more worry, more anxiety,
Yeah.
because you're sort of seeing everything all at once. It's kind of like the feeling that I get when I come back from vacation. And everything in my inbox has multiplied many times while I was gone, and it's all marked as important crisis and all this stuff. It's not a good feeling. And the way your brain is built, you have a thinking part of your brain and you have a emotional part of your brain, let's call it. That's a big simplification, but
Yes.
let's go with it
Yeah,
here.
I like it.
Okay.
I'm with
Yeah.
ya.
And so, anxiety and or depression are the emotional parts of your brain, right? So when that part of your brain gets turned on, when you get more emotional, fill in the bad emotion word here, there's
Stress.
a,
What if you're
yeah,
stressed? Right. Yeah.
whatever you want
Okay.
to call it, bad emotion du jour, it turns off the thinking part of your brain. There's a direct connection there. And so when we wind up with this cycle, and this is something that I have to deal with in my clinical practice all the time, when you aren't focusing well, it leads to more of those bad feelings. But also, if you have those bad feelings, you can't think right while you're emotional. We've all had that experience. When you're flying in a plane and it's going bouncing, bouncing, you're like, oh my God, we're all going to die. Then when the plane lands and everything's okay, you're like, what was I worried of? Plane is the safest travel there is. And Pilots live in the air and they don't worry
Right.
like I do. So, like when I'm not worried about things, I can think about them in a much more calm and focused way. So that is a very long answer to your
Yeah.
question, but I wanted to kind of lay the groundwork so that you understood kind of where I was coming from there.
That's very good groundwork. So I can understand, it makes me think, right? Like just being at school, right? Can be hard to be focused the entire day. It's a long
Oh,
time to be
it's a long,
focused
that's
when
such a,
it's not in your, when it's not easy to be a person who's focused, right? So I imagine
it's,
you go in and out of trying
yeah.
to focus, even if you're taking medication, right? It doesn't work in a straight line.
I don't
So,
know anybody who's focused all the time, that's for
yeah.
sure. And
So it
that's
can
not
be
the ex,
hard.
yeah, it's not the expectation. Nobody's like a focus robot. What I would say is that, it's important to focus when you can. Like, you want to be on or off, but not kind of halfway in between as much as possible.
Right. Okay. And so are most kids with ADHD tend to be more anxious? Or is
That's,
it like vary based on
I think it's
individual?
very individual. And of course, some of the symptoms overlap, so it's hard to know what comes from what. Just today, I was talking with a lovely girl who is 14, and she is unmotivated and not doing her work. We were trying to figure out today whether she was unmotivated because she was depressed and, not able to do her things because she was so down, or whether she was down because she was not able to get her work done and, was falling behind and getting stressed. When you look at, questions that mental health professionals ask, there's a lot of overlap between symptoms of anxiety and depression and attention deficit disorder. So sometimes it can really be hard to tell what comes from what. And oftentimes it's all there anyways.
Yeah, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? Is it the
Right.
anxiety or the ADHD? So
Right.
that's why it's a good idea to seek out a professional if
Yeah,
you're
but even
trying to
the,
help your child.
As a professional, I can tell you sometimes I don't know. Sometimes we decide, well, we're going to try it this way based on past experience or based on, gut instinct. But it is a difficult question to answer for anybody. But yeah, as a parent, yes, your child the best, but no, you may not be the most objective person about your child either. And the same is true for the kids. The teenagers especially will say, well, I'm the one who's experiencing this, so I know exactly what I'm talking about. And yes, they do know a lot, but on the other hand, we all benefit from someone objective as well. They're the least objective people about them.
Right. Okay, so if what if your child is struggling with depression and or anxiety, what treatments are available?
Well, the treatments that are recommended and helpful are not always available. That's the problem. There's been a huge shortage of therapists and psychiatrists and other mental health professionals. It is hard for many people to find one, and finding one that's affordable and on your insurance is almost a ridiculous proposition
Yeah.
right now. I regularly tell people to call 75 people to find one person.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah, it's not an exaggeration. They really have to do that. And it's sort of an hour, a couple of hours really of calling, 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 calling. And many people don't call you back. So, you have just a few people to sort from at the end. But even still, people have a hard time finding a professional to help them. What is recommended is therapy, as a first line, and there can be, medication help as well. I'm talking for anxiety and depression.
Right.
The therapy is a first line treatment, but medication is use sometimes when we can't find the therapy. But don't forget, there are also some non-medication, non-therapy types of things that can be helpful. You know, sometimes there are books that are helpful. There's books about anxiety, books about depression. And as you know, I have some books about ADHD, but focusing on the anxiety and depression, there's some really good books out there as well. So you and or your child might benefit from books which are available. Also, habits. So going outside is important. Disconnecting from your screens is important. Getting some exercise is important. These are all very important things for anxiety and depression, not to mention sleep.
Yeah, getting sleep. Yeah.
Getting
and
some
the
sleep.
Exercise is probably the best antidepressant.
I think it's a great antidepressant when people exercise enough, and I'm not talking about walking for 10 minutes, but, you know, exercise that makes you sweat. It changes your brain. There are chemical changes in your brain that result from the exercise. It also helps people with focus. It also helps people with falling asleep that night. And it gives
Right.
a big boost to your self-esteem.
Yeah.
And it's hard, you know, if you're depressed and you can't get out of bed, you probably cannot even envision exercise. But hopefully you can exercise so you don't get that depressed and can't get out of bed. I mean, it's a really important thing to make yourself do if you can do it. And it could be something fun. I'm not one who thinks running is fun. It's very efficient.
Yes.
And it's outside, it's good. But, you know, there might be other funner things to do that you might do with a friend, and the social aspect might help you.
Right.
I love boxing. There's tennis. There's all sorts of things that you can do that might be fun, too.
Right.
Think
While you're
creatively.
Exercise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's my next question. As a parent, and I think this is hard for the child too, is like, how do you help your child manage their school life without, while also helping them keep like the anxiety and depression in check?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And that really may depend a lot on the age of your child, right? So you will manage a younger child differently from an older child,
Right.
where you can't possibly do it so much. So, but in the younger years, even if you have small kids, you know, trying to get them good habits such as this, you know, yes, if you're going to watch TV or be on an iPad or be on a phone, it's helpful if you tell yourself how long you're going to be on it. And will you please set an alarm so that the alarm goes off? You know that your time to be on the screen is off, and you get yourself off the screen. That gets away from a kid relying on a parent to tell them what to do, which makes the parent the bad guy.
Right.
And, you know, it sets up bad habits over the years. When are you going to get your homework done? Might be a good question to ask a 10-year-old, for example. You might be the person who helps her keep her schedule. Like, okay, you do have your piano lesson at this hour and lacrosse practice at that hour. How are you going to fit your homework in? And of course, you may be guiding her more when she's 10 than when she's 15 or 17 or whatever. But those are good questions and good ways to approach smaller kids. As an older kid, boy, that can get tricky. What you're trying to envision is launching them into some sort of independent college situation, whether it's a community college or a four-year away college. Colleges are not going to tell you how your kid is doing in school,
right,
whether they're missing work. I mean, that's not what they do. It's illegal for them to do that unless your child signs a form. And the thing about it is, you want to kind of keep that endpoint in mind as you're moving through the middle and high school years, because the goal is not just to get them into college, they got to survive once they get there. So, trying to, in terms of your question, it kind of depends on how impaired or how problematic the kid is by that point. But you always have to meet people where they are and see if you can increase their, improve
Their
their
independence.
independence. But it's not going to be going from 100% support to 0% support. You want to take the, you want to look for about 5% improvement and repeat the 5%. So we know this from like studies of athletes and the flow. How do you get somebody to do something new that's scary? You want to kind of do it little by little by little. And kids have to have some buy-in, especially when, not only when, but especially when they are teenagers. So, you got a kid who might be not turning in work, not studying for tests, not practicing his whatever. And you need to ask that kid, what is important to you? What do you want to do differently? What would make your life better? And no, I'm not going to listen to no homework or, some pie in the sky thing. But, is there some area of your life that you can envision being 5% better? That might give you an idea where to support them and where not to support them.
That's good advice. So let them kind of take responsibility for the 5% incremental, 5% of the incremental improvement, and then as a parent, maybe supporting them on the other parts while they're mastering an additional 5%.
You have to have some communication, and that communication is not you telling your child what to do, unfortunately. As a parent, I would love it if they would just do what I said, right? That would be fantastic. Not ever happen. So, I think, the old joke, my husband's a psychiatrist, so he tells the old joke about the how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Whatever the number is, but none, the light bulb has to want to change, right?
Change.
So,
Yes.
and if you think about focus, I said everybody focuses sometimes and everybody's not focused sometimes. Well, you know what? The same things turn that switch in our brain towards focus. I focus better if it's something that I buy into, I want to do. I see the point in, I find interesting. And so some of getting your child to focus on something is seeing it from his or her perspective so that they can have that turn to focus. They need to find a way to buy in. They need to find a way to be interested in something. One of the problems with too many electronics is it's raising a bunch of kids where they're used to everything in front of their eyes being entertainment and they are very passive about things. So if it's not entertaining, you swipe. If it's not entertaining, you swipe. And then they might do that for 5 hours or more per day. And of course, that trains their brain. If you do anything for 5 hours per day or more, and 5 hours is a random number, it's just come up a lot today. But if you do anything for hours per day, you train your brain to think in that way. And you have to take that brain and put it into the real world. It doesn't work very well because people are not like, beautiful all the time and coming up with snappy comebacks and, all these other things that we see and that seem so real online. So, people are like, I don't like this. Well, like, nobody really cares. You have to find something in it to like. You have to find a way to like things. But if you can do that, then you know what? You can find it. You're going to have a great life because you're going to learn how to like a lot of different things.
If you get, I never thought about that on the phone, right? That could be why you hear young adults, right? Or
Yeah,
having
they're
a hard
bored.
time kind of launching into careers and that kind of thing. Maybe
Yeah,
I think
there's.
men, young men, that's what I read a lot.
Yeah, that's.
In
I
their
heard that.
20s are not like they're not that excited about
Well, I
launching
mean, my
into a
husband said.
career.
Yeah, I mean, I heard something about that they're all doing a lot of games instead of
Yeah.
launching into a career. I think that's really, really sad,
Yeah.
actually.
Yeah, and finding public servants like firemen, policemen, that kind of thing, it's becoming difficult because they're more into the
Yeah.
video screen life versus public service or whatever that may be. But
Yep.
anyway, that's a whole other topic, but you got me thinking with the phone thing. Okay, so I think with parents, when a child then gets into this anxiety and depression, they tend to isolate themselves. You get into this cycle, right? Parents get their kids get stuck in this cycle of they're really anxious, avoidance, I guess would be a way to put it. They isolate themselves from their friends and their activities, and then they don't want to, it's hard to get them out of that loop. So what do you recommend to parents when they're find
That
their
is a
child is stuck?
difficult loop. And you're right, it's sort of a negative self-reinforcement because being in your room, which really means being on your phone or, screens a lot, most likely, is horrible for your mental health. We're not meant to be inside, we're meant to be outside. And so, I would say if you can't get your child out, see what help your community can offer you. Yes, therapy is important, but you also have teachers, coaches, friends, and whether that's friends who are adults or your child's friends who can help you with your child. And again, we're looking for baby steps first.
Yeah.
Getting maybe it starts with opening the shades. And then, getting into the living room and then getting out on the porch or something like that. But some kids, it's you do everything right and it still doesn't work. And, parents have a lot of guilt because they feel like it's their fault. But sometimes this is not your fault. This is not your control. This is something that your child is going through. And so, finding the right help is what you can try to do as a parent.
Yeah. And then are you suggesting maybe limiting the screens if they're under
Oh, yeah.
18 and they're, to really pull back on the screen time
Oh,
to motivate them to
yes.
get out? Yeah.
Oh,
Okay. Yeah.
yes. Definitely. So, it's hard to
So if
know.
they're in eighth grade, really isolating them and kind of getting in this loop of like depression and anxiety, maybe backing off screen time and
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing
creating more
this,
balance.
yeah, and trying to get activities so that they are responsible to others. So, maybe they would be part of the crew in the play if they don't want to be on stage. Well, they have responsibilities. They have
Right.
people who are going to depend on them. So, there's plenty of activities out there that, there should be no shortage of them. You will wind up with kids who are like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. They say no to everything. We already have a problem here. And sometimes, the stern, well, if you say no, guess who else can say no? I can say
Right.
no. You're allowed to say no. Go ahead and say no. But I can say no too.
Right.
We all have the ability to say no. And
Yeah.
so, if you say yes to this, I'm going to tell you now, I'm going to be more likely to say yes to other things. If you say no to things, be prepared. We all
Yeah.
have that power.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the last little subject, not a little subject, big subject that I wanted to cover and just touch on for just to give parents some insight and feel hopeful and some actions that they can take is when suicidal ideation kind of comes into a play with an ADHD teen or young adult. Like, what do parents do? How common is this in ADHDers?
It's hard to really know how common it is. It is, because depression is more common in ADHDers. Somebody who is very depressed and who's considering suicide is unfortunately also more common in ADHDers. Plus, unfortunately, with impulse control issues, you might actually act on those impulses to some degree, more than if you were not an impulsive person.
Person.
So, the impulse control, which isn't for everybody with ADHD, but is more common in ADHD, can also play a role. So, as a parent, you're trying to ensure safety first. However, how do you do that? If your child is saying that they are committing suicide or that they're think about killing themselves, then, the first thing a parent is thinking is like, is this really it? Is this the hyperbole of teenagers? Is this someone saying it out of frustration or manipulation sometimes? Versus, do they really truly mean it? And so you want to look for other signs like sleeping, eating, whether they're interested in going out with friends or doing activities that they enjoy. But this is often where a professional is needed. Unfortunately, it's again hard to access the right person when you need them. Emergency rooms are always open, and they do have people there who are trained to evaluate kids to see if they're serious about committing suicide. So that is always an option for people. We can say there's a lot of things we could improve about what happens after you get to an emergency room. If, sometimes people are being held there for a long time until they figure out what to do because there's a shortage of inpatient facilities for teens. So it's not necessarily the easiest ride once you get there. However, in an inpatient facility, your child should at least be safe and give you time to sort this out. But I'm hoping
Got it.
that, most kids who say that they're suicidal will not commit suicide, but it's finding those few, that is the tricky part.
Right. And maybe finding out what the real reason is behind it, why they
Yeah,
may be saying it.
exactly. And it's so sad when young people who have the world in front of them are sad. My heart goes out to all those who are dealing with that.
Do you think the COVID times
I think it'll,
escalated a lot of this in kids?
I think it. It sure, there were some kids who did fine in COVID, and some kids who, especially if they were socially anxious for a while, they were feeling pretty good inside those walls. However, there's a was a lot more exposure to the electronics, and a lot of kids have had a hard time saying goodbye to that. And there's a lot of social pressures on electronics, that you see sort of idealized relationships all the time. And so I think it's been hard for a lot of kids to crawl out of COVID. And they've missed some years where, I just call them like the playground experiences where you have to negotiate with other kids and, decide what to do. And you can't take it personally if somebody doesn't want to play the game, you want to play the game, and all this stuff. Combined with a general, at least where we live, sort of less unsupervised play outside where that same negotiation takes place, then, kids, I think, are needing to work on social skills
That'll come
and
in time,
not being
right?
anxious about social interactions, right? Like
Yes,
when I was
getting
young.
comfortable. Yes.
Right. Like when I was young, I had a friend, I would have to call the house. Hello, Mrs. Brofman, is Adria there? And blah, blah, blah. You'd have to talk to adults and, Now you can kind of do so many things without talking to people. So
It's a whole new world.
it's a whole new world. There's some good things about it and there's some
Yes.
difficult things about it, but the same basics apply. You want to eat, you want to sleep, you want to get your exercise. Those are sort of like the three rungs of the stool that hold me up every day.
Yes. And as parents, I think those are important, right? With your kid, especially if they have ADHD, probably got to make those,
Oh yeah.
instill those pillars daily to
Absolutely,
make sure.
absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Sarah. This was a wonderful conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
I learned so
Kate.
much from you.
Oh gosh, Kate, it was fun to talk with you. Thanks for having me on your show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care.